As we rush headlong into this 21st science fiction century, we need something older and connected to that which is deep inside of us. And stories and storytelling can do just that. Welcome to Talking Stories on East London Radio. My name is Tony Cranston. My job? Travelling the world, writing, collecting and telling stories. And your Talking Stories host. Welcome to the magical, mysterious, sometimes scary, very often funny, world of stories and storytellers. Once upon a time, the famous physicist Albert Einstein was confronted by an overly concerned woman who sought advice on how to raise her small son to become a successful scientist. In particular, she wanted to know what kinds of books she should read to her son. "If you want your children to be intelligent, read them fairy tales," replied Einstein without any hesitation. "Fine," she said, "but what else should I read him after that?" "Again," he replied, "if you want your children to be very intelligent, read them more and more fairy tales." Professor Einstein added that creative imagination is the essential in the intellectual equipment of the true scientist, and that fairy tales are the childhood stimulus to this quality. We are with Professor Einstein, and this is where we start our show today. And on a packed Talking Stories on East London Radio today, we have children and adults all being creative with poetry, stories, and interviews. So, for Professor Einstein and all of you, our Talking Stories listeners, the children of Polar Bear class at Wyburn Primary School in New Eltham have spent the term exploring the wonderful genre of fairy tales as a class project. The whole class would be delighted if you would join them by listening to their version of a story Professor Einstein would have known. The Pied Piper of Hamelin.
Once upon a time in Germany, there was a lovely town at the edge of a river. It would have been wonderful to live there, except one thing. Rats. They were everywhere. The town was overrun with them.
They fought the dogs and killed the cats and bit the babies in the cradles.
The people of the town had tried every way they could think of to get rid of the rats, but nothing had worked. At last, the people became so angry about the whole situation, they marched to the town hall and demanded the Lord Mayor that he would do something about it.
"We've had enough. It's time you sorted out the problem. It's your job. Get rid of the rats or we'll get rid of you."
The Lord Mayor groaned. He had no more ideas left and said, "Ape, you're trying to think." He called the councillors together so that they could have another meeting. But just as they sat down at the council table, there was a tiny noise at the door.
"Come in!"
The door squeaked open and a strange-looking man came into the room.
His queer long coat from heel to head was half a yellow and half a red. He himself was tall and thin, with sharp little eyes, each like a bin.
He wore a red and yellow scarf around his neck, and at the end of it dangled a pipe like a recorder.
"Hello, I'm the Pied Piper. I'm magic in my pipe and I could whistle away your rats for you. Will you pay me £1,000 if I do?"
£1,000? No, I'll not pay you £1,000. I promise you I'll pay £50,000 if you can get rid of our rats."
The Pied Piper stepped into the street. He put his pipe to his lips, and before the first three notes he had played, there was a sound like a muttering.
And the muttering grew to the grumbling, and the grumbling grew to a mighty rumbling, and out of the houses the rats came tumbling.
There were big rats, small rats, thin rats, fat rats, old rats, young rats, Brown rats, black rats, all of them scurrying, hurrying, scrambling and scrambling, following the piper and the magic tune.
He led them dancing through the streets of the town, round the corners, up and down, along the river, and they stopped, but he didn't stop playing. All the rats plunged into the water and drowned, all except one who managed to swim across to the other side.
The piper turned back to the town.
May I have my £50,000 now?
The mayor stood still. The council stood if they were turning to, as if they were turning into blocks of wood.
£50,000? We haven't got 50 pence. We can't pay you. We have no money.
The piper stood quite still.
You promised.
I promise. We didn't mean it anyway. There's nothing you can do now. The rats are gone. I saw them drown with my own eyes.
I'll blow my pipe again if you don't keep your promise.
Go then, blow your pipe until you burst.
The piper put his pipes to his lips again and played three long, sad, sweet notes. Before the last note had died away,
there was a rustling that seemed like a bustling. Small feet were pattering, wooden shoes clattering, little hands clapping and little tongues chattering.
Out of the houses came all the boys and girls, running, shouting, laughing, singing. He led them dancing through the streets of the town, round the gardens up and down. He piped them to the very end of the river.
The Lord Mayor and all the people of the town stood still, horrified. They were unable to move or shout or stop the piper in any way. But the piper turned away from the river and led the children towards Koppelberg Hill. Suddenly, a huge doorway opened in the hill and the piper and children disappeared inside, all except one boy who couldn't keep up with the rest and was left behind when the door shut fast.
The Lord Mayor sent messengers north, south, east and west to try to find the piper. He was offered to give the piper all the gold and silver he wanted, but it was too late. The piper and the children were gone, never to be seen again.
The Lord Mayor and the people were sorry that they hadn't kept their promise.
Future, if we promise someone something, we'll keep our promise.
I hope you think carefully before you make a promise.
And I, having made a promise, I hope you keep it.
There is a message also from their teacher, Miss Claire Weatherhead, and her class. We would like to thank Tony, who me, for encouraging us to find our inner storyteller. Ah, well, you're all welcome, children, and well done, absolutely every one of you, well done. Let me now introduce 9-year-old Beatrice Affleck from East London, who wrote and now reads her own story, The Magic Animals. And remember, you heard her first here on Talking Stories.
Magic Animals by Beatrice Affleck. Violet stared at the door. It made the whole tree shake. Well, the stump anyway. She wondered why Saskia, her best friend, the guinea pig, was still in her bed. No, she wasn't. She had just, right now, on cue, tumbled down the stairs and landed on the floor. Violet went to open the door. Outside was a bedraggled bird.
I'm Anne, the sparrow, she explained.
I'm Saskia, reported the guinea pig. Why should we trust you? Asked Violet.
The whole reason I came here was for shelter, explained the bird. I was discovered by scientists and my home was wrecked.
I'm Violet a Mouse, explained Violet. In a while, they were all best friends. Strangely, they all shared the same thing. They were different. They could talk, they could invent. They were magic. But a year ago, they had also been discovered by the worst things, humans. By the worst and most frightening job, scientists. They were out to catch animals. Magic animals. Magic animals must tread carefully.
I'll go and shred some tea leaves outside, squeaked Violet.
As soon as she stepped outside, a pair of gloved hands reached out and grabbed her.
The scientist has caught her,
even though she was an inch high. She squeaked a warning to her friends as she was put in a cage too small, with bars too small for her to climb through. It had initially been for Anne. That explained why it had a perch, even though it was high up. Violet still managed to sit on it. Then they arrived at the lab. Violet was put on a small table with important documents on it. She decided to shred them up.
Speak for us, write for us, invent for us. Now, 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 now.
Professors Cunning, Silverfish and Smokeheart started chanting, but they were interrupted by the boss's loud voice.
Stop! I shall do it!
He strode over to Violet and tried to force her to speak.
Father, she doesn't like it!
In rushed Dr. Cummins, Dr. Kearns' son.
He's a boy, grunted Dr. Kearns.
No, I'm not,
piped in Violet. There was a moment's silence.
So you can talk,
said Dr. Kearns with glee. All of a sudden, Dr. Cummins scooped Violet up and ran. The little white mouse scampered into his pocket. All went black as Dr. Kearns' hand closed around her. He'd caught her. She was shoved into a cage with metal bars surrounding her. To her great horror, beside her was the two unmistakable shapes of Anne? Saskia? Is that you? How come you're here too?
We're found, said Anne.
Captured, started Saskia.
But your house is okay, sighed Anne.
Our home,
corrected Violet.
Thanks,
chirped Anne.
So guys, how are we going to get out?
Asked Saskia. This is going to be easy getting you out, said a voice. But by who?
It was Dr. Cummins.
Quick, my father will be here soon, whispered Dr. Cummins. Off they ran after being unlocked from their cages. They were accompanied by Dr. Cummins, who made a potion to turn himself into a mouse. He took it every day. They were safe. For now. I would tell you, but my hand is aching from all this writing and my pen is about to run out. But the most important thing is, it's another story. The end.
Well, Beatrice, that was breathless and fabulous. Everyone who knows you should be proud. You do have a talent. And if heaven gave you the talent, let no one ever take it away. Recorded in 2016 by East London Radio, Parked Primary School in Newham recorded 70 children aged 6 to 7, and this is their running voices.
Miss Cunningham from Parked Primary worked with Year 2 children exploring ideas about running. All the children wrote lines about their own running experiences.
My breath feels like a volcano.
My breath comes out of my nose.
I think I'm going to stroll.
I feel like I'm breaking the wall.
My breath is cold.
My heart is so cold as well.
I want to be strong.
I think I'm going to have a heart attack.
I think I'm going to make my heart come out of my body.
My breath is hard.
I want to be famous.
I am a runner.
My heart is not beating.
I am crazy.
My head stays straight because I need to see where I'm going.
My head is okay.
I think I'm going to get healthy and strong.
My breath is puffy.
My heart is peeping.
My heart is running away.
I get strength.
Strength is really healthy.
It makes me feel strong and muscular.
This is because I can lift up heavy things.
I run like an animal because I run really fast.
I am a leopard.
My head feels back to normal.
My breath has run out.
I get so tired and bored.
I like to make my family happy.
Heart beats faster.
My heart is like powerful.
I like to do it.
My head is dizzy.
My breath is boiling.
It makes me feel strong.
I'm going too hot.
It makes me feel like I'm going to be the winner.
I think I'm going to pace myself and rest.
It makes me feel like a cheetah.
I think I'm going to be brave.
I'm so fast like a flash.
It makes me feel powerful like a star.
It makes me strong.
It is good.
My heart beats like a drum.
My head is thinking of you.
And my heart slides like a trumpet.
My head gets warmer when I run.
I love running, that's my favourite.
It makes me feel cool.
Beats, beats, beats.
I think I'm going to explode because I have so much energy.
My breath is low.
My heart is booming.
I think I'm fast like a fire.
I need water.
It makes me feel panic.
I think I'm going to have a break.
I want to get money.
I want to be strong.
My heart beats fast.
My heart has been so cold and my leg hurts.
I run to school when I'm late to school.
I run because I can get more.
I run so I cannot run anymore.
I'm feeling amazed.
My head is wet.
My breath is making me deeper.
I think I'm going into the house.
My breath is almost wasted.
I run because sometimes I'm frightened.
I feel a lot of strength.
My heart is like a guitar playing a fast song.
I want to get fit.
My breath is drumming.
I feel so fit.
My head feels on fire.
My breath is puffing up my mouth.
My head is woozy.
I want to change.
It makes me happy.
I think I'm going to get healthy and strong.
I think I'm fast like a fire.
I run because I want to be fit.
I like running because I can run with my friends.
I like to run all the time.
I want to go to the moon.
I think I'm going to run at playtime.
I feel like I'm breaking the world.
I feel good and tired.
My heart can beat fast.
Running away.
I want to know that I'm fast.
Get healthier.
Running out.
I run so I can stay alive.
Tired, get tired.
It makes me feel like a star.
I run like a champion runner.
I think I'm going to win.
In 1748, the politician and aristocrat John Montagu, the 4th Earl of Sandwich, used a lot of his free time playing cards. One of the problems he had was that he enjoyed eating a snack whilst still keeping one hand free for the cards. He came up with the idea of eating beef between two slices of toast, which allowed him to eat and play at the same time. Eating his newly invented sandwich, the name for two slices of bread with something in between, became one of the most popular meal inventions of the world. What's interesting about this is that you are very likely never to forget the story of who invented the sandwich ever again. Or at least, much less likely to do so if it had been presented to you in bullet points or purely information-based form. Here is the science around storytelling and how we can use it to make better decisions every day. This is how our brains become more active when we tell stories. We all enjoy a good story, whether it's a novel, a movie, or simply something one of our friends is explaining to us that they've experienced. But why do we feel much more engaged when we hear a narrative about events. It's in fact quite simple. If we listen to a PowerPoint presentation with boring bullet points, only certain parts of the brain are activated. Scientists call these Broca's area and Wernicke's area. Overall, it hits our language processing parts in the brain, where we decode words into meaning, and that's it. Nothing else happens. However, when we are being told a story, things change dramatically. Not only are the language processing parts in our brain activated, but every other area in our brain as we experience the story events. When we tell stories to others that have really helped us shape our thinking and way of life, we can have the same effect on them too. The brain of the person telling a story and the brain listening to it can synchronize. By simply telling a story, you can plant ideas, thoughts, and emotions into the listener's brains. Storytelling is one of the most powerful techniques we have as humans to communicate and motivate. We have been doing it for over 27,000 years since the first cave paintings were discovered. It is our most fundamental communication method. Sensational storyteller Judith Black from the USA, recognized by her peers as a master storyteller, receiving the coveted Oracle Award, the Gold Medal for Family Entertainer of the Year, and the National Youth Storytelling Pegasus Award, and many, many more. She has been inducted into the National Storytelling Network's Circle of Excellence for exceptional commitment and exemplary contribution to the art of storytelling. Her work has also been featured in venues such as the Smithsonian Institute, the Montreal Comedy Festival, and has been featured many times at the National Storytelling Festival. Her contribution to storytelling comes in several forms, including commissioned work for the Disney Institute, the Massachusetts Foundation for the Humanities, as well as presentations at the National Storytelling Festival, the National Trust for Historic Preservation, the Hillel International Leaders Assembly, and the National Museum of American History. I first met Judith some years ago at the Waterfire Festival in Providence, Rhode Island, where legions of her fans came to see her funny, edgy, and energetic performance. Hello, Judith.
Hello.
Really glad to see you again. Last time was in Boston.
Yes, it was. And you were performing in Central Square, Cambridge.
Yes, that was last summer, I know.
We like to call it the People's Republic of Cambridge.
Really?
Yes.
Yeah, it was a very interesting place with lots of storytellers that came to that show that evening.
Yeah.
It was rather interesting. I liked to listen to the others too. They were really good. But what brings you here this time to London?
Well, I have a week of work in Paris and did a conference for teachers a couple days ago. And I thought, ooh, you have 4 free days between that and the work in schools. Go to London and see theater.
Oh, so where you're off after this?
Theater. I'm going to go see some Molière.
Oh, excellent. Good stuff. What else have you seen since you come here then?
Oh, brilliant. The Incident of the Dog in the Night, some of the best theater I've ever seen. Both the staging and how they conceptualize the book and how they express the internal workings of a young man with Asperger's syndrome.
Oh.
And unless... how do you explore theatrically what goes on inside someone's head? Because a lot of times people say, well, you only can do that through a novel, or a storyteller can comment on what's going on. But then how do you do it on stage when you don't have that kind of narrative? And they did it just so well. They did it through staging and lighting and physicalization. It was very good.
So you're a storyteller and not just a storyteller. You are the storyteller. So where did it all start?
couldn't earn a straight living. No, and in a way, that's true. I had my degree in education, and I was a teacher at a wonderful project for infant growth and development, and then had a nursery school classroom, and had a headache every single day. Have you ever, for instance, been dating someone or had a job, or you're doing something that seriously other people say, oh my God, Tony, you're so lucky. She's a doll, or that's a great job. But there was a physical part of you, a headache, a tick, grinding your teeth. Your body was telling you something's not right, but your frontal lobe refused to acknowledge it because externally it looked very good. You know, this was a wonderful young lady, or you made a good income at this job. And so externally everyone said, aren't you lucky? But internally you knew something wasn't well connected for you, and it wasn't the place you needed to be. So as a teacher, and I love the kids, they were fantastic, but I kept getting headaches. And the only time the headaches went away was at night when I worked with a local theater company. And then they disappeared. So I said, okay, what's your body telling you? And while I was teaching, I also started telling stories for the children in my class. And here's the thing, I was just making these stories up off the top of my head because I love to eat, so we cooked a lot. Now cooking teaches you a lot of things. I mean, you know, we're also learning about science, we're learning sequencing through the steps, we're learning recall, we're doing all this stuff you have to do educationally. And we're eating, what a joy. And so while whatever it was cooking, I would make up a story for the students about the giant kitchen. And we would do in the giant kitchen whatever we had done in our lesson, only of course it was, fill in the blank, giant! And then problems would come up because suddenly the honey jar was 6 feet tall and they had to put a ladder against it and climb in, and how do they measure a giant half cup of honey? And something would always happen, like Molly would fall in the honey, or we'd get stuck underneath the pizza dough, and the kids would have to figure out, they would finish the story by basically saying how we got out of that predicament. And they were frame stories, which means they always had the same beginning and ending. So we always entered them the same way and left them the same way. The clock struck 12, boom, 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 boom. And then the ending was the children crawled back into bed just as their parents were waking up. So there were like dozens and dozens of these stories, and I thought I was just reinforcing learning and blowing the time away till we could eat. And then I started doing home visits, and the kids remembered the stories. So one child would say, tell my mommy the story, the giant kitchen story. Oh gosh, honey, which one? The one where Gabe and I are using the big saw to cut the loaf of rye bread. And that is when it dawned on me, Miss Dunderhead, that these stories were doing much more than just reinforcing learning and blowing away the time. That it made these kids the center of their world, the heroes and heroines of their world. And that was sort of my first, you know, little keyhole into the power of storytelling.
That's a great start. That's a good start. Once you know this is what you want to do, then you're off. Then
right.
You're off.
And for me, it was a great combination because I did leave teaching and I worked as an actress with a national touring company for a couple years. But acting is really, okay, I look Jewish. I'm not a tiny person. There are just so many times you can play Golda in Fiddler on the Roof. You know, is this the little girl I carry? You know, it's like, okay, I've done it already. And then you realize in a story, you get to be everyone. Everyone. You get to identify with every character. And you never have to tell a story you don't care about. As a professional actor, there are things, if you want to earn a living, that you do. You make commercials for something as hideous as nuclear power, which I believe is kind of an evil way to make energy. Even though there's no carbon output, they still don't know what to do with plutonium. Uranium railings are dangerous. You have to guard the plants. If people aren't completely compulsive about the way they do it, I just keep thinking of Homer Simpson at the controls. You know, and I know the people that created it are brilliant people, but they're not the ones running these plants. So, as an actor, you have to take whatever job comes down the pike and use the skills that you have been developing for decade after decade to sell something you don't believe in. Well, that's no way to live an integrated life. So, storytelling is a completely integrated life. You tell stories you care about, and you work with human beings to raise issues, to create images that you can share, to make bridges. It's, I can't imagine a better way to make a living.
It's certainly an interesting way to make a living, and it keeps your brain ticking over the older we get. The older we get, the storyteller we get. In fact, the uglier and more wrinklier I get, the better storyteller people seem to think I am. So,
yeah, crones really rate in this profession.
This is true. So what keeps you motivated now?
I think we're looking at the end of our species run here on the planet. If you read a book, there are a number of very good books that explain what we've done. One of them is called The Sixth Extinction. And we are the most successive invasive in the world. And I know you have to deal with Japanese knotweed here in England. I'm sure you've seen Japanese knotweed. I mean, people say you can see it growing. It grows so fast, you know, and it digs its roots in so profoundly, it's very hard to get rid of. Walk the streets of London at 5 p.m. Can you walk at a normal pace? What's there too many of?
People.
Right. We are the most successful invasive on this planet, and we are everywhere, and we don't stop multiplying. And we don't stop burning fossil fuels, which have created greenhouse gases that warm the planet. And it looks like, I actually have a TED Talk about this. So if you look up Judith Black TED Talk, it's about storytelling and climate disruption. Basically, we're warming the planet to the point that the permafrost, which owns 20 to 25% of the Earth, is breaking up. And under the permafrost are megatons of methane. Methane is a greenhouse gas over 30 times more potent than carbon dioxide. And the permafrost has started breaking up, and once that methane is released, it creates, it's called a positive feedback loop, which is an ironic term, but what it means is the gas releases, it enters the system with the other greenhouse gases, it warms the planet more, more methane is released, the planet warms more, more so you see the circle. And we'll have no idea what to do with it, but the planet will warm beyond recognition. And I just read an article recently by a scientist in the Arctic, there's even a date when we have our first extinction event, and it's probably 9 years off.
Wow, that's not long to go.
No, and this is what's embarrassing. So I've been active in environmental organizations ever since they tried to build a nuclear power plant at Seabrook, New Hampshire, over 40 years ago. You know, and I was there on the ground screaming, yelling, and protesting, but evidently never enough. Because we just don't have a long-term view. And it dawned on me, Judith, this is your job. You should be helping people have a long-term view through very human stories that they can identify with. Because I get that people don't identify with climate science. It's too big, it's too odious, and ominous. How do we do anything? But if we tell stories about human beings who do things, we enter the issue through them, which is the power of our art. So that's my focus now.
That's true. We identify with those people, and then we become those people.
Yeah.
That's true. So where do you apply all of these skills of yours now?
Wherever people invite me. So for instance, next week I'm going to be working in schools in Paris. And most of them are, of course, bilingual high schools, because you don't want to hear my French. And a couple of them have asked to please do environmental material. For younger children, it's just about stewardship. You know, so I created this set about trees and wrote a song about trees. And once you hear and you become invested in these stories and you start to identify with both the issues and the trees. You can't walk by a tree without looking at it differently.
Yes.
Without wanting to honor it, without understanding that it is drinking in your CO2 and exhaling oxygen. Oh my God, that's brilliant. Thank you, tree. And then for the older students, I'll tell a story that I've created recently called Bitta the Bug Girl. And it's just about how an orphan who grows up with her family and is and loves entomology. She's a taxonomist by three because she's digging the dirt in the backyard of their old farmhouse and loves bugs and categorizing them. And it's about Bitta's journey to understanding what's going on to our planet, what's going on.
Judith, for those new to storytelling and listening to Talking Stories here on East London Radio.
Good plug.
One of the things storytellers or new to storytelling always ask is, what do you do when you forget the words? Oh my gosh, I'll be so scared.
Bingo, you don't remember words. Stories, in my mind, are not about words. They're about images. And if in your imagination you have gone from image to image to image, then you can't get lost. Because if I say to you, do you have the same alphabet song we do? A, B, C, D, E.
Yes, yes.
And that's how we learn the alphabet. So if I say to you, what comes after G? You usually have to go through the whole song, A, B, C, D, E. Pretty crazy, huh? Mm-hmm. And it's the same thing when you memorize. If you memorize something and you forget, it's very, very hard to pick up because you've memorized it straight through and one thing is dependent on the next. So you're gone, you're lost. But if you've not worried about the words and instead you know this happens, then this, then this, and you've created those pictures, the scenes in your imagination, you can never get lost.
Oh, that's really good. That's good to know. For everybody listening, this would be good to know. Do you have any warming up rituals to get you through all of this?
Yes, yes, all the time. If it's completely new material, one of the things I've learned is if you're completely in the story and not paying attention, you can lose people. And that happens with new material sometimes because you're so nervous about remembering those images and making sure you get everything in. So before beginning, not only do I go over the images, I look at who's there and I just try to throw this kind of net around the listeners so that they can become family and feel that there'll be a sharing that goes on here. So learning to love your listeners is really important, especially when you're in a place, if you start feeling hostile. You know, and I'm sure you've experienced this. Sometimes you'll be at a place where parents bring their children and then they feel they don't have to be part of the event.
Yes.
And you start getting really like, because they're schmoozing about a sale at Walmart or someplace. And they've brought their child, they've done their job.
Hmm.
And the minute, and I only know this because, of course, I've fallen into it. And when you start to get angry at people, it's done. It's just done. Because story is about creating community. So one of the things I pray for and look at is how to keep people in that community. When things happen in the house, you know, somebody comes in late loudly or a baby starts to cry, or if you're doing children, someone's playing with Velcro on their shoes in the front. How can you make that part of what's going on? So I pray for that strength and I look at people and I throw that net over them. And then sometimes breathe and pray.
Judith, when are we going to see you next performing in the UK?
When I get hired.
Ah, how can we contact you in that case?
I have a whole week and a half in Paris, and I work in Paris pretty regularly every couple of years, touring schools there, but I've never had work in the UK.
Oh, so how can anyone contact you and learn more about Judith?
Go to my website, storiesalive.com. And you can contact me at jb@storiesalive.com.
What story have you chosen for us today and why?
I've chosen a story because it's the right amount of time. It's an adult story, and a lot of my work is for adults. And interestingly, often very humorous, but this one isn't. I'll just tell you, stories that you create from your own life experience, they come from images that you can't get out of your mind. And in order to understand them, you have to create a story. And that's how this one got made. It's called Homecoming.
Flight 436 from Bangor has just landed at gate 12A.
And I thought, thank God. The lovely woman in the matching blue suit with the pumps, the coiffed hair, and the makeup is not going to have to share the waiting room with the crazy lady any longer. The crazy lady was pacing back and forth like a panther. She was going down and doing push-ups. She was doing jumping jacks. Well, the crazy lady looked at the beautifully coiffed woman and thought, she deserves an explanation. So I walked over. I am so sorry, ma'am. I know, like, you must completely think that the outpatients are out in full tonight. It's just, my son is a young Marine, and he's coming home from his first combat tour in Iraq, and that woman turned to me, and she smiled, and there was even less starch in her suit. Oh. I'm one of the few people who can say, I actually completely understand what you're going through. My father, he was career Air Force, and we had that same fear every time he came home. But then the second the next words were out of her mouth, we both knew they were a lie. I'm sure he's fine. I'm sure he's fine. When I was in college, I worked at a homeless shelter for men in Boston. And these men, they were the garbage barrel of World War II. They were the men whose hearts and minds were just a little too open to keep the horror of war safely in a room in the back of their heads. And it permeated their lives. And they ended up on the streets. There were the men with ticks under their left eye and the guys who backed up against a wall to make sure they could see everybody who was coming and going. They were the men who self-medicated feverishly. And you know, every war has had a name for them. It was, let's see, shell shock in one generation. And it was combat fatigue in another generation. And in our generation, Tony, they call it PTSD. And these are the guys who in the middle of the night are suddenly hitting the person they love next to them, strangling them, screaming because they cannot keep the image of a baby burning in napalm neatly locked in the back of their heads. And now it was my son's turn. They started up the gangway. I knew he'd be here, and every bit of my mother antenna was going, oh God, where is he, where is he, where is he? And then I saw him, but I did not scream out. Instead, I looked. He stood his full 6'3". His eyes were clear and focused straight ahead. His big shoulders were pulled back. He still had that I'm king of the world jaunt in his step. Hey, honey! And I flew into his arms, and he is big enough that he literally could pick me up. And we're walking out of that waiting area, talking and laughing, and I think, oh my God, I need to say thank you to the lady in the blue suit. And when I look over, tears are rolling down her cheeks. Her makeup's pouring through them in rivulets. And I want to say, it's okay, good. Look, he's fine, he's healthy, he is whole. So far, homecoming.
the storyteller of storytellers, the wonderful Judith Black.
Hello, everybody. My name is Anna, and I'm a storyteller who specializes in folk tales from around the world. You can find out more about me at www.uponmyword.co.uk. I think it's great that this radio show exists so that so many of us can hear so many stories from so many storytellers from all around the world.
A Spanner in the Works is the new book by Eileen Wiltshire. It is a beautiful and atmospheric work about her roots and life in East London. Roger Taylor, the poet and writer, says her poems crown her book as a small masterpiece. It will be available later in the year on Amazon. Eileen reads some of her fabulous work for Talking Stories listeners now.
All the old boys. Look at them, the beautiful old boys, high and dry on the Rotherhithe mud, tilting their spindly masts to the murky wintertime sky. Oh, how I love them still, these gems, to me as perfect as when, in years gone by, they sat or sailed the running Thames, gave nod and cheery wave to other shipping on the tide. In drifting mist and later dusk, I linger by this ancient dock. Shush! Do I hear a sudden laugh, a scratching match, and fainter cough? And through my clouding, tear-filled eyes, perceive my granddad ambling by. Dockside days. Anything for a quiet life. I suppose that's how it's always been for those in their stagnant years. Small joys mingled with much strife. Doors slammed on hopes, on dreams, many a sad deflated wife blanked out. So numbed, past care, chose sacrifice, through love, you understand. Not thinking twice about what could have, should have been. Except maybe in the darkness of the night, when in despair, heart's tears still bleed unseen. Just like when we were little, there were always the pigeons. We didn't really notice them. They lived on the ledges of tall buildings or sauntered in the dirt below. They watched us Londoners come and go. The day started and ended with them. After all, they were Londoners too, just like me and just like you. And actually, they never flew. Well, not very far. In the gutters, they rummaged for food, ate casual scraps that kept them going. We, free of the gutter, ate scraps too. EastEnders together, whatever the weather. Those pigeons certainly knew how to bill and coo. But not like me, and not like you.
For further information, bookings, etc., email alan.wiltshire@gmail.com. Jagdish Sokhal has sent Talking Stories a short poem called I Don't Know Me. Jagdish, who lives in the London borough of Bexley, says she has been writing poetry since she was at school. She has had some published in various anthologies, but one day she would like to have her own collection of poetry published. Further information and bookings for Jagdish, email jagdish@jagznov@gmail.com.
This is called I Don't Know Me. I am of olive brown, white, yellow, black skin. Present day origin, I'm happy with what I was given. I look at myself watching the world full of many people who have their own morals, values and cultural agendas because that's what they have grown up to believe and know. But wait a minute, I have to hold back on my thoughts. The blood that runs through my veins that I see through my coloured skin could be the same as them. They could be my unknown family. A connection from centuries ago with twists and turns which somehow have divided us. We got lost in our way. I am of olive, brown, white, yellow, black skin, present day origin. I don't like myself now with the skin that I have been given.
If you are a poet who would like to be featured on Talking Stories here on East London Radio, send your recordings in to me at totocranston@hotmail.com. That's totocranston@hotmail.com. Claybury Woods in East London, Essex, is an ancient woodland, most probably part of the Great Forests of Essex, connecting with Hainault and Epping forests. Royalty used to hunt in these forests, and it's a truly wonderful, magical and colourful place to be. To get there, make your way to Fairlop or Barkingside stations, walk up Tomswood Hill or Ravensburn Gardens, and you can see the woods. Bus numbers 169 or 275 will get you there. Map coordinates are TQ4355-9105. In 2007, I was commissioned to write a story activity book about Claybury Woods. A lavish, full-colour, beautifully illustrated A4 book with 16 stories and over 100 environmental key stage 1 and 2 activities for families and teachers. This is one of those stories, now also available on CD.
Hello, my name is Tony Cranston. Let's take a walk together and listen to some wonderful stories about the trees, flowers, and animals, and of someone special who lives in Claybury Woods. Why the trees whisper. Trees know a few things. In the morning, they wave their branches to the children on their way to school. In the evening, they whisper tree songs to help the children sleep. This is the story of why the trees whisper. In the early days of Earth, not long after the trees were created and humans came, a man went out to the forest to cut wood. The first tree he came to was a pine tree, but as soon as the man lifted his axe, he heard a voice cry out, "Don't cut me! Can't you see the sticky tears that are already coming out of my body? If you hit me, it will bring you bad luck." The man then saw the sticky sap coming from the cuts in the tree trunk. So he left the pine tree and went deeper into the forest. Then he came to the hornbeam tree, and again he raised his axe, but the hornbeam tree cried out, "Please don't cut me down. You will find me of little use, for my wood is too heavy and much too hard." The man went on again until he came to an alder tree. Once more he raised his axe to strike, but the alder tree called out to him, "Please don't wound me. Whenever I am cut, blood runs from my heart. It will stain my wood blood red." The man stopped, but then he called out to the spirit of the woods, "How am I to get wood, to make fire, and to build my home? Every tree I meet cries out and pleads that I not cut it down." So the spirit of the woods took pity on the man and said, "Return to the forest. From now on, no tree will talk back to you." The man did as he was told, and this time no tree spoke to him. None called out as he cut them down to make his home and to make a fire. The trees were not happy, however, and have never, never spoken to a man again. But it is said that when a child enters the forest and becomes very quiet, they can hear the trees whisper.
Well, that's the end of another program. We do hope you liked it. It is unique, it is different, and it's the first in the UK dedicated to the spoken word, oral stories, and the art of storytelling. Tell your friends about Talking Stories here on East London Radio. You will find us at www.eastlondonradio.org.uk. And if you would like to have your work talked about, your story told, your publication noticed, your group, event, meetings mentioned, well, of course, we would love to have you and promote all your talents. Get in touch with me, Tony Cranston, your Talking Stories host, by emailing totocranston@hotmail.com. That's T-O-T-O Cranston@hotmail.com. And remember, as long as there have been people, there have been those who tell their story. And you can be one of them. Thank you.